Alright, we're going to start with the two dots on Chaf Aleph Amud Bet. The Gemara is discussing the last line in the Mishnah, which the last line in the Mishnah says that Uvachol Makom Lo Yaskir Lo Et Merchatz Mipnei Shenikra Shemo. You cannot rent out the bathhouse in any place because it's always called by his name. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Abshim Ben Galil Omer Lo Yaskir Adam Merchatzo Lo Uved Kuchavim. A person may not rent out his bathhouse to a non-Jew Mipnei Shenikra Shemo, because it's going to be called by his name, is known as so-and-so's bathhouse, Moshe's bathhouse, then, and then, the bathhouse is now going to be open on Shabbos, on Yom Tov. So when it's open on these days, people are going to say, oh my goodness, Moshe's keeping his bathhouse open, Shabbos and Yom Tov, and it's going to look horrible. Or, people might come to emulate such behavior, which we do not want to promote. Aval l'kuti, Mai, what's the din to a kuti? Mai says, shari. So why? What's the story with the kuti? Kuti, emar, avi be melocha b'chol shamoed. So he says, well, we have a problem with the kuti. True, the kuti will keep Shabbos, but he won't necessarily keep chol shamoed. He won't necessarily desist from doing work on chol shamoed. So when I says, b'chol shamoed, ana nami abdinon. We also do work when it comes to Chol Shmoed. We do things that are Darish Aved. Plus, one of the things that we do is that we open up the bathhouses. We allow people to take baths, and therefore you can be Mecham. You can heat up the water in the bathhouse. So the Melocha that's being performed here is not necessarily problematic for the owner himself. And therefore, if the Kuti is the one doing it, it's not going to be a problem. So the distinction being drawn here is between Novi Kochavim and a Kuti. Novi Kochavim does work both Shabbat Yom Tov and on Chol Shmoed, and it's going to be called Moshe's bathhouse, and so it's going to look bad, it's going to look inappropriate. On the other hand, when it comes to the Kuti, we know that the Kutim keep everything that's written in the Torah. Shabbos, or the desisting from Malacha on Shabbos, is something that is contained within the Torah, and therefore the Kutim would definitely keep it. On the other hand, Malacha on Chol Shmoed, whether you believe, which happens to be, we'll get to a little again later today, is a machlokas rishonim, whether it's midoraita or midorabanon. But nevertheless, it's not explicit in the Torah. The fact that you have to desist from malachot chol moed is something that is interpreted by the rabbanan. Therefore, the kutim don't hold of it. So they will keep the bath open on chol moed. It'll be a problem. It'll be Moshe's bathhouse open on chol moed. So the Gemara says that's not a problem, because even if it wasn't a kuti, even if it was owned by Moshe, he could open it up on chol moed, because these are one of the malachot, one of the things that we allow you to do on chol moed. Aval sadeu the ovei kuchavim mai. What about a sadeh? So far we've dealt with a bathhouse. Now we're moving on to sadeh. What about a field? So here, the Gemara says, Lo vei kochavim mai, what's the din to give it to a non-Jew? He says, shari. No problem giving your field to a non-Jew. My taimo. Ariso arusutei ko'ovid. It's a very important principle. Principle is that the sharecropper is doing his sharecropping. Which means that when it comes to work on a field or on anything that is done, if it's to the benefit of the person themselves that is working there or doing the work, they are permitted to do that on Shabbos, and it's not a problem for you. Whereas if the work is being done for you, then we have a problem. So we generally have, if you hire somebody, and here we're talking about a sharecropper. You have a sharecropper who's sharing in the field. Now the sharecropper wants to work on Shabbos. So what's the problem? Wait, that's your field. He's working on Shabbos, but you're going to say, oh, you have a shliach, or you're paying somebody, a poel, you're paying a worker to work on your field on Shabbos. But a common type of relationship in fields is that of a sharecropper. A sharecropper relationship, when the sharecropper goes in and work the field, to whose benefit is he working? The benefit might accrue to the owner of the field. The truth is, the reason he's going in on a Saturday, he's going in on Shabbos, or a Yom Tov to go and work the field is for his own benefit. He wants the field to produce more so that he gets a higher amount. His percentage will lead to a higher amount. It's to his benefit to do it or to work the field. Or, it's better for him to work on Shabbos than it is to work on Monday. So he wants to work on Shabbos. So for that reason, he's doing it for his own benefit. If it's own benefit, then we don't worry about it. Now, since it's a common relationship, we see other people will see it and say, yeah, it's the sharecropper, he's doing it for his own benefit. On the other hand, merchatz nami, why don't you say the same thing by a bathhouse? Arusutei, right? Why don't you say the same thing? You have a risa arusutei of it. Why don't you say that the joint owner, the guy becomes a partner in the bathhouse, and he's doing it for his own benefit. He's getting a percentage out of the bathhouse. Where it says, Amrei, why don't we say that by a merchatz? Amrei, arisa arusutei of it. Where it says, risa de merchatz lo abde anshi. people do not rent out, do not have relationships with their bathhouse in this way. There's no such thing as a sharecropper relationship when it comes to a bathhouse. Nobody would set up such a relationship. So when people see him working in the bathhouse, they think that he's working for Maishi, or that he's establishing Maishi's bathhouse. And therefore the problem is that he's actually working in the bathhouse, even if he was supposedly or able to create a rusute. If he did do it in a sharecropper man, it wouldn't matter, because the people seeing it don't know or don't think such a relationship exists when it comes to bathhouses. And therefore they're all going to think that they are working for you. And that's the problem over here. The Tosavot also gives an alternative answer, or an explanation to what the, how to explain here what it means that by a bathhouse, Arisa Rusutei Avid, and he suggests that it's not what we're just saying now, that it's not the type of relationship that they have, but rather it's the issue revolves around how you get paid. You get paid by a piece of the property, or through what you get there, then that is important, then you can do it, because it's your benefit. The better the produce, or the better the quality of the produce, the better your payment is. Then, when you're getting cash, whatever you do there is not going to improve your cash take on the property. Right. So now the Gemara continues. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Mer lo yaskir adam sadeh lo kuti, mipnei shni kreit al shmo. Person should not. Now, this was until this point Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion. Now we're on Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's opinion. Shimon Elazar says a person may not rent out his field to a kuti because it's called by his name. Vekuti ze oseh bo melacha b'chol shemoed. The problem is that the kuti is going to do work in your field on chol shemoed. So as opposed to a merchatz, where he does work on Chol HaShemoed, and we say that you would have done it anyway, so it's not a problem. Here the Kuti is going to do it on Chol HaShemoed, and it's going to be a huge problem. Aval Ovi Kachavim Mai, what's the din by Ovi Kachavim? Shari, Teretz Mutar, Damre Arisa Rusutei Ovid. Because the sharecropper is doing it for his own benefit. It says, Iochin Kuti Nami, why do you say the same thing by the Kuti? Amre Arisa Rusutei Ovid. So when it says, the Rusuta, the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar lately, Shimon ben Elazar does not hold to this concept of Arisutei Ovid. He doesn't think that that exists. Not either that the relationship doesn't exist or people are not going to think that way. So what's the difference between an Oved Kochavim and a Kuti over here? Gemara says, Ela Oved Kochavim, my time of Mutar, Damrin and Leivit Zayit. Because when it comes to the Oved Kochavim, we're going to tell him to desist from work and he's going to listen. But on the other hand, we talk to the Kuti, why don't you say the same thing? I mean, they will tell him not to work on those days. V'tzayit. Kuti lo tzayit. The Kuti doesn't listen. I know more than you. Right? The general syndrome, Jewish syndrome, that if you tell someone what the aloch is and not to do something like this, what are you telling me? I know what the aloch is. I know I can work on this day. I don't really, doesn't bother me what you're saying. So we see over here that the problem for Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is not the problem of, or it's not really the solution that was given by Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Shimon Gamliel's solution is that Arisa Rusutei Ovid, that the Arisa, the sharecropper, is always doing it for his own benefit. And we have to look in each situation, is he doing it for his benefit or not? And also look at the situation, whether it's Chol HaMoed or Shabbos, whether it matters what type of work is being done. Shimon Elazar says that is not the dispensation over here. That's not why it's permitted over here. The permission or the ability to do it in this case, or rent it out, has to solely do with whether they're going to listen or not. If they're going to listen to us to desist from Malach on Shabbos and Chol HaMoed, then we can rent it out to them. That's the case of the Goy. But the case of the Kuti, he won't listen. So you're right, he won't do Malach on Shabbos. That won't be a problem. But he will do Malach on Chol HaShemoed, Malach that's not Muteret, and it'll be called after your name, your field, the field has your name on it, and therefore you're not going to be able to give it over to him because he won't listen to desist from work on Chol HaShemoed. That was a very important, this part, the big Tosfos on the previous Amud, it's a very important Tosfos from the Rabbeinu Tam. It has less implications here in Eretz Yisrael. It has a lot of implications in Chutz La'aretz, and that's people are renovating their homes. They hire contractors to finish the work on their homes in Chutz La'aretz. One of the things is, and it's a problem many times, is that the contractors come, they work on Shabbos in the homes because that's a day of work. They won't mind, they'll do an extra day of work for them. They get moved along. They can get workers, they get people wearing other contracts that can bring them over on that day. So they'll work on Shabbos, and certainly Chol HaShemoed, they would work on these houses. Now these houses are in the middle of the community. You walk by the house on Shabbos, you know whose house it is, and there's a contractor and they're in building. I mean, sometimes they knock the whole house down, rebuild it. But you have contractors working on Shabbos. It's a problem because it's your house that has work being done on Shabbos, and everybody knows it's your house. The Rabbeinu Tam here has an unbelievable dispensation. He says, Pasuk Rabbeinu Tam, Alochak Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. First of all, Alochak is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the first opinion. And that is that Arisa take of it. Umidok kach yitir, the Israel, Shinatan Beitel Aso Bekabalanut, Ibnopo Afilu B'Shabbos. A house that's given to a contractor to build, can it be worked on even on Shabbos? Why? It's a Kal v'chomer in Amihu. The hashtag resutzadeh shechelik ha'isom mashbiach v'melocho shari. But the case of the sharecropper, even though the sharecropper is doing his own benefit, nevertheless, the Israel benefits from the work on Shabbos. He does work on Shabbos. It's for his own benefit because he gets a higher percentage. I mean, it's not a higher, his percentage will be worth more, but he also helps the Israel out. By a kablan is a contractor, it's a fixed price. The Yisrael gets no benefit from the kablan finishing earlier or later. That's his claim. Right? By the Yisrael, Shnatan Beitol Asoba Kablanut, Livnobo. Right? What happens? Shane Bo Shabbos, the Yisrael Klal, but Memeshaher Nachwil Asoba Kablanutol. So there, when the contractor races to do it faster, Lokoshake in the name of the kablan or Kablanute Kavit, the kablan's working on his own contract. He has a fixed fee that he's going to get. And the faster he finishes it, the better off he is. That's less he has to pay his workers. And that benefit all accrues to him. It accrues nowhere or nothing accrues to the one who hired him. Now that, you could argue on that premise, that the person wants his house back faster. He wants to have the house back, and many times the contracts are designed in a way that there's a penalty if he goes over a certain amount of time. So there is a benefit to the Israel, because he wants to be in the house by a certain time. He's renting another house before he comes in there. Now if he's living in there, then maybe it'd be less so. But even there, he wants the person out before Yom Tov. He wants the item done by, he wants somebody to come and live there. All of these things could drive you to want the Kablan or push the Kablan to work faster. So that you could argue on. But even if you don't say that, we still don't hold of this Rabbeinu Tam. But the Rabbeinu Tam himself wanted to suggest that contractors are mutar to use on Shabbos. He brings some proofs to it, and then the Re argues on him. And he says that brings down proofs that argue on him. Rabbeinu Tam explains some other Gemaras talking about Avelus and not about Yom Tov or Shabbos in order to get around the problems. And then he lets go. But then if you look later on, it says Ribderi perish the Kablanut, the Bait Asur. By a doche kol rayot Rabbeinu Tam. He used to knock off all the proofs of Rabbeinu Tam. And he brings goes one by one, and then he knocks them off. And he says that we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, as opposed to Rabbeinu Tam says we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. He says we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that when anything's in the city, you got to move it out of the city. That it doesn't matter. You have to go chutz the tchum. That if something's within the tchum of Shabbos and people are going to walk by the place in Shabbos, you can't be doing work there, or you can't have somebody doing work there, because people are going to get the wrong impression about why someone's working. They're going to think they're doing your shlichut. It's a problem of working on Shabbos. But even though the halachas of Shimon Lazar, when it comes to kablanut, there's an exception when it comes to arisuta sadeh. There we hold like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Even the Re says that. And later on, this is the greatest line here. Rabbeinu Tam, afa pishe hekel bekibalut. When it came to kablanut, he was mekiel. He chmir al atzmo. He was machmi on himself. Ukeshebana beito. When he built his own house, lo niach ovdei kachavim livnot b'shabbat. Even though he passed the halacha that way, he was machmir on himself that not to allow Eovi Chachamim to work for him on Shabbos. Afa pisha yusum bekablanut. Even though they did it on kablanut. So there's the Rabbeinu Tam himself, even though he's willing to be matir, and he probably gave the heads to others, he was not willing to be makil from himself, and he was machmir on himself. It doesn't say here he changed his mind. It doesn't say that he retracted his position. It just for himself, it was machmir, and he wasn't willing to have the contractor come in on Shabbos. Right, so it is a dangerous precedent. Now, obviously, sometimes when a person's machmir for themselves, you don't want to impose their chumrah on others. But it's also important that the Morad Adra acts in a way, or does that people feel consistent, that his psak is consistent the way he acts. Sometimes if he's machmir for himself and he lets others do it, seems to be an inconsistency. If he's not willing to do it for himself, why is he machmir for others? It's important. In cases where he's machmir for himself, he has to make it clear that he's machmir, and that's why he's doing it, but he would allow others to do it. It's a question of Ikar Adin versus Chumran. You have to be careful in these instances. Then it does bring the Ram over here. I don't know if he's talking about the Rav Meir Mirotenberg. He entertained Tam Nohochi. Mutar barisut sederet kevin sheino tel ma'ot bischaro. Elon tovim mikufa karka. Ah, here's the other explanation that above about what does it mean. It is how you get paid. If you get paid with money, then there's a problem of having a person there on Shabbos. Mutar risut sederet kevin sheino tel ma'ot bischaro. But sederet, you don't get paid. The sharecropper doesn't get paid cash. He takes out of the produce of the field. And therefore, when he works harder, it's to his benefit. It accrues to his benefit. A kablan who's working on a house, you're paying him in cash. So his speeding up the delivery of the house or the work does nothing about the house. It's nothing about his benefit. He gets the same cash. He finishes earlier or later. So kablanut to buy it, where he gets money, b'scharo, lo v'kishutaf. He's no longer a partner in the place. So therefore, he doesn't benefit with a better house or better outcome. He just gets the same money no matter what. And therefore, we say that it's asur over here. That's the Meir, that's the Ram's explanation over here, that the issue revolves around how you get paid. If you get paid by a piece of the property or through what you get there, then that is important. Then you can do it because it's your benefit. The better the produce or the better the quality of the produce, the better your payment is. Then when you're getting cash, whatever you do there is not going to improve your cash take on the property. Now we do have, or today it's important, for instance, people work in the houses. We have people working on our houses. Sometimes you have a guy working in the house on Shabbos. They're not allowed to do any melacha that you can't do. You can't instruct them. They can't do for you melacha that they wouldn't otherwise do. But, say for instance, they need to wash the dishes on Shabbos. So you can wash the dishes on Shabbos. So they can wash the dishes for you on Shabbos. Now they make a choice. They wash the dishes with hot water. Why do they wash the dishes with hot water? Because it's easier to wash dishes with hot water. Right? In Shabbos, it's more difficult. When you have to wash with cold water, it's much more difficult. So you make a choice to wash cold water because you can't wash with hot water. They have to wash the dishes. They could wash it with cold water just like you could. But it's easier for them to do with hot water. So when they wash with hot water, it's not for your benefit, it's for their own benefit. It's an easier way for them to do it. And that's permitted on Shabbos. They're not doing the melacha for you. They're doing the melacha in order to benefit themselves. Because they have an alternative to do it in a way that's mutar. And they're not choosing that because it's easier for themselves, not because they can't get the outcome that you want. You want dishes washed. You don't care how they do it. So they could do it in a way that doesn't involve melacha. So when they do it with melacha, they're doing it for their own benefit. That is something, a similar type of concept or idea that we have by Shabbos, that you have to be careful. The melacha has to be done for the benefit of the one who is doing the melacha, not for your benefit. And that's the important distinction here along the way, is that the person's always doing it for their own benefit and not for your benefit. Right now the Gemara continues. So Amar says, if you're worrying over here about it calling on the name of Moshe, it's Moshe's field. Let's say the problem is a problem of Lifnei Iver. Why? Because we're talking about a Kuti here. And this is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar the Shitato, who believes that the Kutim are Geirei Emet. They are real Geirim. They are true blue Jews because they did a proper Geirut. And therefore, you have to prevent them from doing an Aveira. If they're going to work on Chol HaMoed, which is a problem, you must prevent them. You must have Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. You have to prevent them from being over an Isur. Chada V'od Kamar. No, the Gemara means one and another. Chada Mishum Lifnei Iver. One problem here is a problem of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. V'od. Lifnei Shri Kret Al Shemo. A second problem is that the field is known by your name, that Moshe's name. So number one, you have a problem if he works on Chol HaShemoed, the Kuti is a problem because it's Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. Number two is that when he works on Chol HaShemoed, it reflects on you. Looks like Moshe's field, looks like you hired him, you specifically asked him to work on Chol HaShemoed, and that's a problem too. So there are two problems over here. Now, this is another thing. The Rabbeinu Tam over here says that, Mikan Yesh Tavi Raya, from here you can bring a proof that what is the din of Chol HaShemoed? Working or doing melacha on Chol HaShemoed, is that a din d'oraita or a din d'rabbanan? We know that when it comes to the kutim, they keep anything that is a din d'oraita. They don't keep anything that is a din d'rabbanan. That suggests over here that the reason the kutim are not listening is because we're talking about a din d'rabbanan, and they don't listen, or they're not going to keep not working on Chol HaShemoed, because that's a din d'rabbanan, not a din d'oraita. If they're Geri Emet, and we know that they follow anything that has to do with d'oraita, if working on Chol HaShemoed was a din d'oraita, then they would desist from doing melacha. The fact that they don't shows you that's a din d'rabbanan. What does the Rabbeinu Tam prove from here? That working on Chol HaShemoed is a din d'rabbanan. It happens to be a major machlokas, right? It's even a stira in the Gemara itself. It seems to be a stira in the Gemara, but according to Rishonim, whether melachat chol hamoed, doing work on chol hamoed, is a din derabanan or a din doraita. So the Rabbeinu Tam said, I conclude from here that it's a din derabanan. I have a proof from my kutim, a kuti friend, so don't keep it, that it's a din derabanan. Ah, the Gemara in Moed Katan explicitly says that when it comes to a difference between working on chol hamoed and working on avelut, it says chol hamoed doraita hi, whereas avelut is derabanan hi. So what do you do with that? So he says, no, it's not really doraita. The Gemara doesn't mean doraita. It means an asmachta. It's the rabbanim asmachta ba'almahu. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam reads the Gemara. From that, the Rabbeinu Tam comes to a second conclusion, which is very important, which also has subject to a machloket rishonim, which is that whether there is a din of lifnei iver when it comes to a rabbanon, an isur de rabbanon. Is lifnei iver only applied when a person is going to violate a din doraita? Or does it also apply when he's going to violate a din de rabbanon? Over here, if you believe chol hamoed or avodah and chol hamoed is a din de rabbanon, then the lifnei iver applies to a din de rabbanon. Talking about a din de rabbanon, he's saying the Gemara is saying there's a problem of lifnei iver l'tutei mechshol. So that's where Rabbeinu Tam comes to these two conclusions over here. One is that working on chol hamoed is a din de rabbanon, and number two is that means that lifnei iver applies to a din de rabbanon. Along comes Rabbi Bochanan and rejects the Rabbeinu Tam. He says, no, not at all. He says that working on chol hamoed is also midoraita, it's also mina Torah. The problem is, and this is like the Ramban explains, what does it mean that working on chol hamoed is a doraita? It means that the pasuk, or we learn it out from a limud at the pasuk, but it was neat on the chachamim to interpret. It's not explicit in the pasuk. Chol hamoed is a drusha out of the pasuk. That's what it means. And the Gemara says Doraita versus the Rabbanan by Velus. That is that by Kol Shemway, the Pasuk that we learn it from, or the Drush we make from a Drush, a Pasuk in the Torah, is by Velut. So over here, I'm sorry, going to Rabbi Hanan, it's easy to explain the Gemara says Doraita and Rabbanan because it really is Doraita. Again, the Rabbeinu Tam says, no, Doraita means it's learned out from a Pasuk in the Torah, Smachta from a Pasuk in the Torah, and Velus is learned out of a Smachta from a Pasuk in Yechezkel. So therefore, the two of them are separate. But this Rabbi Yochanan says it's midoraita. So why don't the kutim keep it if it's doraita? Because it's not explicit in the pasuk. It's only a drusha in the pasuk. It's a drusha. They don't believe in those drusha. They don't listen to Chamim's drusha in a pasuk like that. And that's the problem. Even though I'm working on chol hamoed doraita, the kutim don't keep it because it's a drusha. Now, as everyone, when I gave many, many years ago, this is a lot of years ago, I gave a chabura on lifnei iver lo titeh mechshol in front of Avraham Lichtenstein, and I quoted the Minchas Chinuch as the one who discusses this issue, this question of whether a din darabonon has a din of lifnei iver or doesn't have a din of lifnei iver. So he stopped me at one point in this year and he says, you should just know that Rav Soloveitchik says about this din, he says that he doesn't understand what the suffix of the Minchas Chinuch is. He doesn't understand those that say that the Rabbanan doesn't have a din lifnei iver lo titeh mechshol. Why? So there are many Rishonim believe, when it comes to lifnei iver lo titeh mechshol, many of them believe that also means you're not allowed to give bad advice. You're not allowed to give someone bad advice. That's included in lifnei iver lo titeh mechshol, is not giving bad advice to someone. Don't give them advice that leads them to the wrong place, or tell them to do something that's bad for them. So he said, Rav Soloveitchik used to say that it's no worse. Causing someone to be over a din derabanan, or leading to that, what is as bad? Why is that any better than giving them bad advice about a business deal? You go in there on purpose, give them bad advice. You tell them bad advice so you can buy the property from them. That's restricted from lifnei iver. Why is giving them advice or leading them to do a violation of the derabanan any worse, any better, I'm sorry, than lifnei iver that applies to bad advice about business dealings? And therefore he said he thought it was clear when it came to rabbanans that lifnei iver applied. So I remember that from when he stopped me in the shir to tell me that Rav Soloveitchik said that, and that he didn't understand the Minchas Chinuch's chiluk in this din de rabbanan. And now the Gemara comes out to a new case. Hani Morikai. So these Morikai are these people that planted fields, actually calls them fields of Ginod Karkom, which is, I think, saffron, that they planted fields of saffron. Now, they made up this way that it worked was that the Obi Kuchavim Nakib Shabto, they shared the work of the field, or the shared crop in the field, that the Obi Kuchavim worked on Shabbos, Bishabachad Shabto, and the Jew worked on Sunday. They came before him and Shorlo. Rabbi says, no problem, they can do this. They can have it where the goy works on Shabbos and the Jew works on Sunday. That's not a problem. So now, Ravina challenges Rabbi's position here. Yisrael, Obi Kuchavim, Shikblu Sadeh, Shutfut. Yisrael and Rabbi Kochavim, that had a sadeh b'shutfut. They're partners in a field. Lo ma'ar Yisrael and Rabbi Kochavim tuchel kochav b'shabbat v'ani b'chol. He can't say, the Jew can't say, you do the Shabbos, I'll do the weekdays. But if that was their original position, that was their original agreement, then it's mutar. So this happens many times in retail. Retail is a big example of this. People own a store that is open on Shabbos. Many times, that's the first happens to be the biggest day of retail. The large day of retail is, and especially in Chosar, is the Shabbos. So a Jew owns a store, and it's open on Shabbos. So what does he do? He says, all right, you know what? The Goy will get all the profits from it being open on Shabbos. So that was what he... So you keep it open on Shabbos, and then the Goy would get that profit. So here it says it doesn't work. If they didn't make this deal originally, it doesn't work. Why? Because they are equal partners in the store now. Then after the fact, if they go ahead and they work, he works on Shabbos and the Jew works on Sunday, they're basically both obligated to work 50% of each day. Every day is 50-50 owned by each partner. Now when the Goy goes in and works on Shabbos, he's doing the Jew's bidding on that Shabbos. Now when the Jew does it on Sunday, true, he's making up for it, but he's paying the Goy back. But each one of them is doing the shlichus of the other on that day, and that's why it's impermissible. Now then, if they build it around this originally, they make the original agreement that the Goy will do Shabbos and the Jew will do Sunday, that's not a problem. But it means that they will get the chelik. The Goy will take all the profits on Shabbos, and the Jew will take all the profits on Sunday. Because they, in those days, I assume that they thought the days were equal. That's why it's much harder today, where Shabbos is the biggest day in Chutz Laaretz, and it becomes much harder to say that. You're going to have to have it, when you have a partner in there, you're going to have the partner work Shabbos, and that's equal, it might be equal to the entire other 5 days together. So it's very hard to make such an agreement in this situation. But now, the Gemara says then, if he bowed a cheshbon, asur. And if he comes to a cheshbon, he's asur. Now, this doesn't go on the other two previous cases in the Braita that's been quoted here by Ravina. This is an independent case. That is, if they did it stam, and the Ovei Chachamim went ahead and worked on Shabbos, and the Yisrael worked on Chol, but the Yisrael never came to an agreement to do that. I mean, they never made the agreement up front, they never made agreement later. It just turns out that the Goy works on Shabbos, the Yisrael works on Chol, and they didn't make any agreement. Then, if they come to do a cheshbon, they come to divide up the monies, he can't say, the Jew can't say, well, you work this many Shabboses, I work this many days. He can't do that, because then he's clearly trading Shabbos, the Schar Shabbos, against something else. And that he cannot do. So he has to do it in a way, if they just divide all the money, it's fine. But if they specifically count how many Shabboses he worked, and how many Shabbos Chol day Chol against that he worked, then you're clearly paying off against the Shabbos that he worked on your behalf, and then it would be asur. So then, ichsif. But Rava was embarrassed. He passed in the wrong halach over here. Here you have a Jew and a Goy who are partners in a field. They're working, one's working on Shabbos, one's working on Chol. This case is asur. There was no condition put in. It's asur. So the Sofi Gle Milsa to hit new Meika Rava. So later on, they found out that the truth was that there was a condition put in up front, that that would be the division. The Goy would work Shabbos, the Jew would work Chol. And with the condition, if it's a precondition to the Shutfut, then it's fine. And that's what the Braisa said. So Rava was right in the end. But so Hashem protected him, even though he gave him Pesach Halacha, and he was embarrassed that he may have given the wrong Pesach. The end it was Hashem did protect him. And we saw these in Bava Metzia. We also saw a series of Pesach Halacha like this, where they gave Pesach Halacha, looked wrong, and later on they found out that it was really right, because the circumstances were in a situation where it was mutar, or it should have been this way. As I may as well tell you now, there's a great story in Boston. We lived in Boston for many years. There was a place called Mixed Street Cafe. It's a kosher institution, but part of the rules of the cafe was that it had to be open. They didn't have to be open on Shabbos, they had to be open during Pesach. So they had a problem every year. They served chametz, and they had to be open on Pesach itself. And he didn't want to be open on Pesach, and the whole thing, if he did a mechirat chametz, it didn't matter, but it was open. It was his store, everybody knew, and it was going to be open on Pesach. So what he used to do every year, it's an amazing thing, he used to sell the store to his employees on Pesach, and he used to let them work the store and keep all the profits for Pesach. It became their store on Pesach, and he would do it. Everybody knew this, that it was nobody was there. None of the Jews were there, because it was outside the Tchum of Shabbos, where we would go necessarily. We couldn't get there on Shabbos, but he kept it open outside the Tchum on Pesach. But he used to keep it open on Pesach. They were serving chametz, but he didn't own it. He sold it away to the employees, and the employees worked and kept all the profits of the business on Pesach for the reason. Right? He had to... Right, I don't know. They could have a mashkiach come in and look and check out that they're still keeping everything together. His mashkiach just ensures that they're complying with the rules of the game. He sets up rules of the game. He can ensure that they're complying to those rules. It just can't be that he gets any of the benefits. So it was an ingenious way to deal with the problem of with Pesach. That became their bonus, basically, for the year, that they got to work on Pesach and keep all the profits from Pesach. Right now, our next case is Rav Gvia, Mibekatil. He said, Amrohanu Shtile D'Arla. The case is totally different. This case that Rav was talking about, it's not a case of the Karkum, but a case where they planted young saplings. And so, Avavodu Kachavim Ochel Shnei D'Arla. The Ovi Kachavim ate the years of Orla, because the Jews were strict there. Yisrael Shnei D'Atera. And Israel ate the years afterwards. So now, to look at the Rav, Shurlo, he said, no problem. Why? Because the way it is that you have to work. The question is, who worked the field during those years? So they agreed. Goy would work the years of Orla, the field, and the Jew would work the years after Orla. Now that's not a problem, because the Jew himself could work during the Shnei Orla. So the Goy's not doing anything that he couldn't do himself. Ah, what about the Achilat HaPeirot? The Goy's going to eat the Peirot during the Shnei Orla, and the Jew's only going to eat afterwards. He says that is a basic law. The basic law or basic understanding in any situation is that if you work the field, you get the Peirot. So that is not because he's trading off payroll before Allah and after Allah. He's basically saying, you work the field these years, and I work the field these years. A kol yotzei, by definition, once you work the field, you also get the payroll. So he's not really trading isurei anah. They're trading the work of the field. The work of the field is permissible for the Jew to do. Once he does that, whoever works that year gets to keep the fruit of that year. That's independent of trading the actual fruits. That's got to do with the work of the field. It's about otzei ravina the rava. What about this whole question? Ravina the rava, he says, the suye saye. He didn't bring it as a disproof. He brought it as a proof to him. He brought the brisa. Didn't he get embarrassed in the case? Oh, you dvarim olam. He said, that never happened. That wasn't part of the case. So Gvia Mekatil explains the whole case differently and said that Rava never got himself into trouble. See, by those stama mai. What happens in a case where they do it stam? Meaning that there's nothing said about it, nothing stipulated, nothing happens. It's stam all the way along, there's nothing said. So tashma, numi tchila mutar. If they made the condition, they made the condition up front, it would be mutar. Ha stama asur. Right? Had it been stam, it would have been asur. So aim. So now you have a proof that stama is asur. But aim a seifa in balu cheshbon. They come and they divide it up in a way that they stipulate that your shabbos is against my yedei chol. Then it's asur. Ha stama mutar. El mehol lech the mashmina. From our gemara over here, we can't come to any conclusion about stam. That if it was stam originally, there was no stipulation, and even when they come to divide the money, there's no stipulation. Over there, we leave it as stam, right? And we have no conclusion. From our gemara over here, we can't come to any conclusion. Another amazing tosos over here is a maaseh that came before the Rabbeinu Tam. Over here, it's the tosos lo yomar lo yisrael ben kochavim. It said maaseh kachaya b'mei Rabbeinu Tam. So a case that was brought before him, shegava yisrael echad b'chovo tanur. The goy owed him money, and he took as a payment for the money, he took a tanur. Echad miovi kochavim, vayelo ofe. And he had a baker, a misik tanur, chokol betanur. That the baker used to work there, and he used to work the oven, keep the oven on, and he would get a percentage or a certain amount of the days of the value of the tanur. So he worked the tanur, and they would share out how much they got for it, but he would always warm the tanur up. He would do the work for the Jew. So now, vayelo li yudi li tol kach v'kach chamim b'chokol ofe, kama gomo kach v'kach. V'kach. There was no condition stipulated, and now they were dividing up the output of this oven, or this that he had taken as a collateral or as payment for the loan. The Re wanted to say it was mutar. It's not like a field. When the other Chachamim works on Shabbos, he's benefiting not only himself, he's benefiting the Yisrael, because whatever the field gets better, it accrues to both of them. On the other hand, about Tanur, all you're doing, you get the benefit. Each day that you work, you get the sales of that day. So the fact that the other Chachamim bakes on Shabbos and gets profits from that has nothing to do with you. It all goes, all accrues to him. Over here, the Rabbeinu Tam was machmir. Even though we say before that the Rabbeinu Tam was much more makil by Kablanut. Over here he was machmir. Why? He owns the tanur, and it's like he's putting a worker to work there by himself that he knows about it. That he said, it's as if he's putting up a worker and saying, go work my tanur on Shabbos. That's what it looks like. By tanur, even if they make the stipulation up front, it won't work, because Yisrael is called tanur shel Yisrael hu. Because Yisrael owns the entire tanur. So if Yisrael owns the whole tanur, and then when you say, you work on Shabbos, what's the problem? The problem is that he owns it. He owns the tanur. It's always the Yisrael's tanur. Even when the Ofer works on it, what's the reason? Because the Ofer works for the Jew on the other days to help him out. He lights the fire. He does work for him. The benefit for him working for the Jew on the other days and the Jew getting the profit is that the Goy gets the profits on those days. But whose tanur is it? All straight through and through. It's the Jew's tanur. Not like the cases by the Sadeh Bab. When they split it, they're really shutafim. They are partners in the field. When they're partners in the field, he works Shabbos and you work the other days, he's getting the profits of Shabbos because it's his on Shabbos. You get the profits of Chol because it's yours in Chol. That's not the case here by the baker. On the baker, both of you are, you own it no matter what, it belongs to the Yisrael. You're paying.
What does it say to me in the book where he says, I have a little friend, the Sika Tanur, Chalkova Tanur?
No, he's suggesting, I think my understanding is that he got Chalkova Tanur was that he used to heat up the oven every day. And the benefit that he got for doing this work, the payment he got, was that he got paid, that he took his portion on Shabbos. So he was getting paid out of that Schar Shabbos, basically. The Schar Shabbos was going to him to pay for the Poel. It wasn't that he owned it on Shabbos. It was that he was getting the Schar of Shabbos. He wasn't a real partner in the Tanur. He was a partner in the profits because that was his payment. That's the way he got paid. That's my understanding of why the Rebbe Chanana rejected this. So he says, Katsro Shel Davar, in conclusion, the Tosa says, Ben Kerem, Ben Sadeh, Ben Merchatz, O Tanur, no matter what they are, L'cho Yisrael V'od Chachovim B'shutfut, Asur Lomar Tulat HaChal Kocha, Elim Ken Yitnu B'tchila. And unless you take, the partnership only works when you stipulate it up front. Otherwise it doesn't work. V'gam Rabbeinu Tam V'otu Masit Tanur, Tziva, he told the guy to reverse the whole transaction. He says, give it back to Omi Chachovim, and then take it back, and they'll vote with note B'tchila, make the condition stipulation up front. So therefore, he said, and then if Yisrael takes it as a mashkom, by the way, then he doesn't have to. He says, if he takes it as collateral, then he does not have to be any stipulation, because when he takes it as collateral, who owns it? The goy still owns it. When he takes it as collateral, it's still the goy's. He's just taking it as collateral. So when the baker works on it, in that case, there's no problem. He's working for the goy. He's not working for the Yisrael. All right, so that's the end of the parak. Next parak, which is this Mishnah, something that we saw before because it was quoted. We quoted this in the Gemara's early on. You're not allowed to put your behemah in the motels of an Ovid Kachavim. We had the problem. We're worried about bestiality. Therefore, they're not allowed to do it. A woman should not be alone with an Ovid Kachavim. We worry about them. They are not necessarily kshirim in this area. We worry about arayot in this case. A man should not even be alone with them, because there's a problem that we suspect them of killing. And therefore, if nobody's going to be with you, then we're going to worry about the fact that you're going to come to Shvichut Damim. Tosos raises this problem over here again. He says, wait. How do we allow our animals to be alone with them? Again, he's talking about his own time. We let our animals go with them. And we even give it over to the shepherds, which we see is a problem. And again, so what? Why are we allowed to do this? So Rabbeinu Tam says, we're so much on the fact that later on in the Gemara, Rabbi Ptat says, our mission is a Dat Yochid of Rabbi Lozar. It's a Dat Yochid of Rabbi Lozar, and we don't hold like that. We hold like the Chachamim. I'm sorry, Rabbi Lezer, thank you very much. It's Rabbi Lezer, and therefore it's a Dat Yochid, and are we passing like the Rabbonon? Even though there's a Ravina argues in Rabbi Ptat, and Ravina is a Batra, so we should pass them like Ravina. Nevertheless, the Gemara brings Ravina first, and then Rabbi Ptat. When it comes to the Gemara, it brings Rabbi Ptat last, even though Ravina was a Batra. So he says from that, it shows that the Gemara wanted to pass them like Rabbi Ptat, and not like Ravina. So he says, because of that, we allowed to do it today. And then he says, Ode b'shel sofrim. It's a din derabbanan. Then kaiman halacha charam ekil. Even if you want to say that it's Rabbi, the Chachamim would agree here, we have a machlokus, we know. The machlokus, we should go after the maker when it comes to a din derabbanan. So here we have a din derabbanan, therefore we have a suffik who to pass in like, the suffik we go to hakel, so therefore we permit it. So Tosus again dealing with these issues of how do we do things that it's clear the Gemara says is asur. We're living amongst the goyim and we're doing these things, and yet it's clear that it's explicit mission that it's a problem. Stam mission that it's a problem. And now, Reminu, Lochim Me'em Be'ema the Korban, Be'in Choshim, Lo Mishim Roveya, Lo Mishim Nirbav, Lo Mishim Muksav, Lo Mishim Ne'evad. You're allowed to buy animals for Karbanot from them. Wait a minute. A Korban is Pasul, if it was, bestiality was performed, the animal, the Korban is impermissible to be brought on the Mizbeach. Also, if it was designated to be for Avodah Zarah, or it was worshipped, they're all problematic for bringing a Korban. So, Bim Shalom Muksav Ne'evad, by Muksav Ne'evad, him into the Aksiv, him into the Palche, if he was designated for Avodah Zarah, he worked it. He would never sell it. If it's his God and he's worshiping it, he'd never sell it to you. So we know when he sells it to you, it can't be that he made it into an avodah zarah. Same thing akse. Rashi says akse is that he hiksil v'yachideu l'chakruv et avodah chamim, designated to give as avodah zarah. Tosafot says that's not enough. There's no such thing as hektish by avodah zarah. Means you have to give it. He already gave it over to the kohanim. He already gave it to the priest to feed it from the food of avodah zarah, and that's they already gave it over. Otherwise, it's not hektish. There's no such thing as hektish by avodah zarah. Ela rova v'nir balachush. But Bishyari, we said in our mission, it's explicit that we have to worry about it. That we worry about the fact that they're going to be roveya or nearby their animals. So Mar says, Amar Rav Tachliv, Amar Rav Shila, Bar Avina, Mishmei Durav. This is the principle of Rav we saw before. Ovev Kachavim, Chasal Be'em Tov. Ovev Kachavim is worried about his own Be'ema. Shalo Te'aker, that it will not be ruined. But the fact, when Bishyari is performed on an animal, again, I don't know, I'm just taking it at face value, that the animal, when Bishyari is performed, it becomes then a akara, it no longer can produce, it no longer will reproduce, and it will devalue the animal. Therefore, the Ochachavim is not interested in devaluing his animal. It says, Hatinach nekevot. That works well with female animals. What are you going to say? Ma'ita lemeimar by zcharim. What are you going to do with zcharim? Male animals. Now, male animals, they can still perform bestiality with them, and yet, it's a problem. So lemeimar, ma'ita lemeimar, amar alkan, o mechishin babasar. That it actually affects the animal. The animal, when Mishkav Zachar is performed, Bishyal is performed on this animal, it weakens the animal somehow. By weakening the animal, again, there's a devaluation of his animal, and he's not willing to perform the arayot in the devaluation. Or when it causes him a loss of money. Elahad Tanya, what about our brisa? Lokhim Be'imami Ro'esh Shalahem. How can we take buy from the Ro'esh Shalahem? They're shepherds. You're buying behemot from shepherds in order to bring us a karban. Le'melichos Dilma Ravalo. Ro'esh Shalahem. Why don't you say that he performed bestiality? Now here it's not his behema. He's watching other people's behemot. So he has no problem with performing bestiality. He doesn't mind that he causes a loss to someone else. Mar says, no, Rosh Hashanah mitareh mishum hefzeh tzchar. He's worried about the fact that he's going to lose his compensation. He's going to lose, if they find him, or they find out that he did it, he's going to not get paid. If he's not going to get paid, then he loses his livelihood. He's afraid for his livelihood. This is an important thing of mirtat. In general, we rely on people where their livelihood is at stake, that we rely on them to do the right thing, because they're not willing to lose their livelihood. It's one thing if they do something and they make a small loss, and then it goes bad, but if they're going to lose their entire livelihood, they're not willing to take that risk. Elahad, Tanya, what about our brisa? Moshim Be'ema, the Roya Shalem. Wait, why can't we give our animals over to their shepherds? If you say that they're afraid of losing their livelihood, why don't we say the same thing when we give our Be'ema over? So if you can buy carbonot from them, why can't you give your Be'ema to them? Lema Roya Shalem, Michere, Mishim Hefzeh Tzcharo. Why don't we say he's worried about losing his livelihood? Why says, Inu Diyade Ba'adodi Mirtate. They who know each other, they know who performs bestiality, they have an inside scoop. And is doing these things, then he's afraid because he knows the goy knows that he does this. Therefore, he's going to check up on him or he's going to catch him. We don't know who does or doesn't do this. We don't have the inside scoop. So therefore, they're not afraid. You're not going to suspect him of doing it, and therefore, he's not afraid. The goy who knows him is going to suspect him. I'm a rabbi, I know damre. This is the colloquialism. This is what people say. That people say inche michtava galala baza. That when it comes to a sharp, like metal utensil, it can cut into the marble. That the marble is afraid of the sharp metal. Or, rigla b'chavre yodo. A person who speaks lashon hara, a gossiper, is afraid of his fellow gossiper. Because he knows, they know their own malacha. They know what they do. They know what they are. Their gossipers are mesapi lashon hara. So they're afraid of someone else who knows. They know what they're going to do if they get in touch with them or they tell them something. So they're afraid of their own kind. That's why Rashi reads it as ragla. Tosus on the other hand reads it as digla. With a dalid. That he says that it's dalid lashon shakran. A liar. A liar knows his other friend who's a liar. A liar is afraid of another liar because he knows the malacha of lying. Exactly, it takes one to know one. So it's exactly what we're talking about over here. That goy who gives it over to the roya, he knows to be suspicious. Because he knows what goes on there, that he knows what they do with their behemoth. The Jew isn't wary of these things because he doesn't think about it. And therefore the shepherd is not afraid of him. So yodo, yochi, zacharim in the kevot, lo nizdabin. So if that's the case, okay, we won't hire, right, zacharim in the kevot, lo nizdabin, the chayshin and dilmi rabbali. What about the other way? Yeah, for females, we shouldn't buy male animals. Because there they perform bestiality, and now we don't have the problem. There's no problem with akar, and there's no problem of kichush basar. If a woman has a male animal, we should not be able to buy that animal. There's no reason to say that she won't perform bestiality with it. Because came with the mar veloi, came into migra ba mirtoto, that the animal will follow after the woman. There's a kind of, again, this idea that if you perform bestiality with the animal will become an affinity to the woman. And to have an affinity to the woman, the animal will follow the woman around. When the animal follows the woman around, everybody's going to know that she slept with the animal. So that's going to be a giveaway. So since there's a giveaway, well, no, if the animal's not following the woman around. And if it does follow around, she's going to be scared. She doesn't want other people to know that that's what happened. So therefore, that fear factor is going to make it that she will withhold or hold back from doing, she will do, from doing bestiality. A widow, a woman who's a widow, a single woman, should not bring up a dog in her house. And she should not house young Talmidei Chachamim in her house. She shouldn't have a dorm in her house for the young Talmidei Chachamim. The reason for these students from the yeshiva shouldn't do it because they're very tsanua. And therefore, even if she seduces, if she sleeps with them, they're not going to say anything. They're not going to get her in trouble because they're so tsanua. They won't say anything about it. Why with a dog do we say it's impermissible? Since it's going to follow after her, she's afraid. She's going to have a dog following her after all the time. Everybody's going to know she slept with the dog. There's another way to get a dog to follow you. You throw it a little piece of meat. Throw it a little raw meat. The animal, your dog will come after you all the time. You feed them once, you know, like a certain animal, like cats and dogs. You feed them, they will always follow you because they think you're the source of the food. So since she can create that situation, even when it's not bestiality, she can create it by throwing the meat at her. When the dogs fly after her, she'll say, people just say, I fed him. They're not going to suspect her of bestiality. To come mistrich. Alright, now, nekivot, it's a nekivot, my time alum yachtinan. So why don't we give them? We can give female animals to the female. Over there, you don't have a problem. There's no bestiality. You have a female with a female. And what's there to be suspicious of? So Gemara says, I'm a kufur rakam, I'm a There's a lot of extramarital affairs that go on. Sometimes he goes over to sleep with his friend's wife and she's not there. He says, well, if so-and-so is not there, I may as well just enjoy myself with the animal. Rova. When it says, nami rova. Even if the woman's there, he goes in and sleeps with the animal. Why? It says that the Jewish animals are more appealing to them than their friends' wives. Now, I'm reading what the Gemara says. I have nothing to add over here. And I'll just read to you what the Tosfos says over here. It says, V'lo no dodari me'echa nafka ikar dovrzeh. He has no idea where they got this from. Alright, I'll say the same thing. I don't know where this came from. It says, I don't know what the premise of this statement is. And the Gemara throws out the statement. I don't know where it comes from. He says, the reading, I'll say the same thing. I don't know where it comes from. I don't know what it means. But that's what the Gemara takes as a given. When the Nachash came on Chava, this is based on the situation that the Nachash really was jealous of Chava, not because he fell in love with her. And then he wanted to, here it says that he actually slept with her. So the Nachash slept with her, he created some sort of filth within her, did something wrong. So Mar says, why doesn't a Jew have the same drive towards an animal if he does this Zuma? The Jews that went to Sinai, that cleansed them. That took them back to this state beforehand, the state before the sin. So the Zumatam, we were at Har Sinai, we got rid of the Zuma. The Chumim that weren't there, they didn't get rid of the Zuma. So they still have this drive, or the Zuma in them that drives them towards bestiality. What about Gerim? So that's the Tosfos at the bottom says that when it comes to Gerim, that even though they weren't there, Mazlayu Havashama, that they, all the Gerim who are future to come about, their Mazel was already at Har Sinai, and that cured them of the Zuma. So even future Gerim are cleaned of this problem, or have absent of this problem. Okay, we'll stop over here, because the next Sugya goes all the way through the Amud.